us today on the summit is former Senator Patrick Kolbeck. Patrick, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be with you, Josh.
You and I were talking just before we started rolling about your career in politics, and now I'm looking forward to ask you about what you're going to do next, and but just in context of using your position as a platform for a voice of truth. And so thank you so much for all that you've done for the awareness around 5G, around dangerous technology, and other matters as well. So looking forward to dive in with you. Before we do so, I'm just going to share with our viewers a little bit about your background. So former Senator Patrick Kolbeck served two terms in Michigan's 7th State Senate District and quickly earned his reputation for being a principled statesman and truly representing the people of Michigan. He was a consistent advocate of policies and solutions that benefit all Michigan citizens rather than the special interest groups that too often influence government policies with their pocketbooks. And although it doesn't take a rocket scientist to be a disciplined leader, Patrick Kolbeck is, you could say, exactly that. He is a graduate of the University of Michigan with a master's degree in aerospace engineering, as well as a graduate of the International Space University in Strasbourg, France. So that's really impressive. And again, thank you for bringing your voice and your wisdom and your background and your position in society to this conversation.
Well, I appreciate that, Josh, but this is a calling, and frankly, we wouldn't been down this path of identifying some of the risks with 5G and other wireless technology if it wasn't for the fact that there were some other trailblazers before us that did the research, that found out what the issues were. It just took me a little while to go off and find out what those risks and what those issues were, but I really appreciate all the work that came before us, for sure.
Yeah, excellent. So let's talk about that. What got you into this whole conversation of wireless 5G and health?
Well, first, let me be clear. I'm not an advocate of going back to the days where we bang rocks together to make fire. I think there's a way to go off and get access to this connected technology, this Internet of Things, without some of the risks that we see before us. My background, as you mentioned, is aerospace engineer. I actually did design work on the International Space Station around cabling design, of all things. So we're worrying about electromagnetic interference and compatibility. I also worked on virtual reality training system for the Department of Defense. So I like technology. That's not the issue. I've been an early adopter ever since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. So I came to this issue kind of kicking and screaming. And it really started with my engagement as a senator, where a lot of my constituents are coming up to me and expressing concerns around smart meters. And originally, I approached the issue from a constitutional Fourth Amendment perspective. I mean, this is personal data privacy, and it was a clear violation of our rights to personal privacy when they were collecting data from these smart meters that had a full profile, a full consumer profile of our household on the data that was being transmitted out to power companies. I thought that was an issue. Especially, it was an issue when they were telling them that you couldn't keep your old analog meters, which were working great for decades and didn't have this issue. So there was this issue of control that was, Spidey senses were tingling, saying something is wrong here. There's more to this. And we were talking earlier, it wasn't until one of the advocates for in Michigan with a group called Michigan for Safe Technology, and that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about going back to the credo of the Luddites. We're talking about safe technology. One of the advocates that had approached my office came over to my home. His name is Bill Bathgate. He's an electrical engineer, sharp as a tack. And even though I'm an engineer, as an aerospace engineer, I pretty much just know the questions around electronics. He has all the answers. And he came into our home and provided a detailed breakdown of smart meter technology. Then he also brought his RF meter and did a little bit of an RF survey on our home. And he provided a series of recommendations for us to actually go off and decrease the wireless radiation signature inside our home. And just to point out, in parallel with my engagement in the Senate, my concern around smart meters, we were having some health issues at home. My wife, who's a pediatrician, was having serious tinnitus, which is ringing in the ears. And we went to every specialist in the book to try to identify what is causing this tinnitus. Nobody had an idea. And my wife's a pediatrician. She knows what questions to ask. Well, I'll tell you, as soon as we took the remediation steps that Bill recommended regarding the wireless radiation sources in our home, which involved going from a cordless phone to a corded phone, which involved turning off the Wi-Fi router and hardwiring the Ethernet cables, so all my internet connections, which also involved opting out of the smart meter. As soon as we took all those measures, guess what? My wife's tinnitus disappeared. Number one. And so it started waking me up saying, whoa, I think there's a little bit more to this than just the Fourth Amendment concerns. And I started doing some digging. It turns out there's thousands of studies talking about the adverse health impacts. And this went on further. When we tested this out, we went over to family and friends' house, went over to her folks' house, and they had serious atrial fibrillation issues, you know, palpitations of the heart. And so we went off and safeguarded their home. We did the same thing we did in our home to their home. And her dad, prior to putting these safeguards into place, was getting fit for a pacemaker. After we took those safeguards and implemented and got them so that they were a clean home from a wireless radiation perspective, he no longer needed a pacemaker. I mean, this is serious stuff. So this is anecdotal, but it's backed up by thousands of studies. And this is a case where we finally, and I'm curious by nature as an engineer, I started digging into this and found out there is a lot of substance to the concern around adverse health impacts and this wireless technology.
Wow, thank you. So you had two terms in the Michigan Senate.
Yeah.
You basically, you know, challenged the prevailing or the industry perspective on not only 5G, but other matters as well. So, and you had you recently in early 2019, you ran for governor, right?
Well, actually it was 2018 and the end of 2017. So it was about 2 years we were on the road making our case.
Okay. So what are you doing next? Just if we could, you know, before we dive in further to the wireless and 5G, I want to like learn more about you and some of your experience and what your plans are now.
Well, keeping with my progression in public service, I had a very nice job. I ran my own consulting business before going into the Senate. Going to the Senate took a little bit of a cut in compensation. Now I'm continuing that trend towards less and less money because I found another cause that I'm focused on right now, and that's taking care of our veterans and military personnel. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually working on a hospitality organization for veterans traveling through Detroit Metro Airport and military entrance processing stations throughout Michigan. So still focused on public service, just that we're taking care of military personnel and their families right now.
Oh, thank you. And you put together a website where people can get their questions answered.
Yeah, one of the things that I found out was nobody was taking on the issues that I was taking on when I was in the legislature. So I'd constantly get these emails saying, hey, can you tell me what you were focused on here? What was the legislation you were pursuing? Hey, can you give me more information on things like wireless radiation or other issues that I was taking on? So I put together a website called morninginmichigan.com, and just to clarify, that's MORNING, not MOURNING. Anyway, you can get my information there, including discussion around this wireless radiation issue. And I linked to the EH Trust website on that site because I think they've got one of the more comprehensive bodies of information on this topic.
Mm-hmm. And your book, you've written a book, Wrestling Gators, is that right?
Yeah, if you want to find out how government really works on the inside and why it can be so frustrating at times to go off and push different policy initiatives when you think it's just common sense that they should be taking option A and instead they choose option B. If you want to know why that is, I tried to explain how government really works, and it's a book called Wrestling Gators, An Outsider's Guide to Draining the Swamp, and it's available on Amazon.com.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. So diving back in, you mentioned about your experience, your wife's experience, and your family's experience with, you know, Bill Bathgate, who actually is working closely with a gentleman by the name of Terry Stotine, who's a dirty power expert interviewed in this summit. I highly recommend that. But do you want to talk more about what are the risks associated with, you know, wireless technology and the untested deployment of 5G?
Yeah, I put the risks in three different categories. One, as we mentioned earlier, the adverse health impacts. I mean, number two is privacy risks, as we mentioned earlier. But another one that I actually, believe it or not, on both sides of the wireless technology debate, they recognize is that of national security risk. So there's three basic risks. The adverse health impacts are pretty serious. I mean, you know, we experience an issue with tinnitus and with cardiovascular issues, but, you know, it's been linked to cancer, infertility, DNA damage. I mean, it acts at the cellular level. So it essentially, I mean, that's basic building block in our human body. And when you're messing with some basic biological functions at the cellular level, it leads to all kinds of permutations of adverse health impacts. And the sad part, from a legislative perspective, in the Michigan Constitution, we have Article 4, Section 51 in our Constitution that states that health concerns are supposed to be the primary concern whenever we propose policy, whenever we put forward legislation. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people are ignoring that for the sake of convenience instead, which is not supposed to be our primary concern. On the privacy risk, you know, we got our Fourth Amendment supposed to protect individuals from unreasonable searches and seizures. And unfortunately, we had a recent ruling on smart meter data by the Seventh Circuit Court. And it was kind of a good news, bad news story, but the end game was not very good. On the good news front, they did recognize that the data being collected by smart meters, which, by the way, will apply to the data being collected by sensors on a 5G grid as well. They ruled that the data was subject to protections under the Fourth Amendment. But unfortunately, they went on to rule that because of the public good, it's okay to go off and collect that information. So essentially, we've set up this conflict between what they deemed in this court decision as the public good versus our own personal privacy. And that's a very slippery slope.
That's not what the original, that's not what the Constitution intended, to have this balance between the public good, whatever that's defined as, and whoever decides that, and individual basic fundamental rights, right?
Right. And they with this decision, with this ruling, they essentially said, forget about the individual rights. We're going to go with the public good, or what they perceive to be the public good. And then the last one is national security risk. I mean, all these grids that we're talking about, whether it's a smart meter grid or a 5G network, they all depend on little devices and network servers and network devices that have motherboards inside of them. And Bloomberg News highlighted recently that the Chinese government actually influenced all the specs on motherboards manufactured in China, which is about 87% of the market, and actually put in a chip that provided backdoor access to any network that motherboard was installed upon. So, I mean, this means that they've got backdoor access to things like our power grid and even some of our defense systems. And if somebody who used to work with the Department of Defense, that's a concern. I take the defense of our nation pretty seriously. The good news on national security risk is I think a lot of the folks in the federal government now, and particularly in the U.S., recognize that there are security risks. Unfortunately, they're saying, well, that's why we need to be the ones leading the charge on 5G instead of the bad guys. And really what we've got to start looking at is why did these risks exist in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll dive into that a little bit later. But first, I want to now get the other side, you know, because it's important to talk about what are the stated benefits, to evaluate the benefits of 5G, the stated reasons why they're doing it, maybe kind of dive, get in underneath of those. But could you summarize the benefits of 5G, or what we're being told is why it's so necessary?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because too often, as people concerned with the deployment of 5G, we just simply dismiss the benefits and zero in on the risks. And I'll tell you, as a legislator, if you've got somebody running into the office in Chicken Little mode, it's something that's typically easily dismissed. And so it's important that you need to go in with your eyes wide open that there are some potential benefits associated with this technology. I mean, now there's convenience, a lot of autonomous vehicle technology. I come from Michigan, and I'm about 30 minutes outside of the Motor City, Detroit. Autonomous vehicles are all the rage. And they're right now, the way that they're developing these autonomous vehicles is that they're basing it on this 5G technology. And it doesn't have to be that way, but that's what they're doing right now. Also, if you actually talk to people in the industry, the big thing that they're pushing is faster download speed. So so all those risks we talked about before, it's all for the sake of faster download speeds. I think people need to be able to start doing that balancing act of benefits versus risks on their own. And so there's also discussions around enabling things like the smart grid for power, also enabling for health concerns. I mean, better routing of ambulances and identification of health issues in the community. So there are some perceived benefits around that, but you always got to balance that discussion of the benefits though with the risk.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's a good perspective. When you and other advocates bring this information to other elected officials, to other people in positions of power, oftentimes, you know, they're still tone deaf. You could say they're still deaf to anything that's critical of this program that's moving forward. Why is that? And do you have any suggestions for how that can be overcome? I mean, is it just being subject to lobbying? Is it that they're not hearing from enough people? Is it that they're being, you know, communicated to in a way that just hasn't been effective? Help us to understand from an insider's perspective this.
All right. Well, first, the good news is this is not a Democrat versus Republican thing. This is, I think both parties approach this issue kind of in a pretty similar fashion. And so the usual pitfalls where you're being an advocate going into a certain environment where I have to worry about positioning this from a Democrat perspective or Republican perspective, that doesn't really apply in this case, I don't believe. The reason a lot of officials are tone deaf, so it's not because of their political background or political persuasion, it's because I think at first and foremost, it's the complexity of the issue. It's human nature that when you hear something that is kind of mind-boggling, that's tough to get your head around, you immediately kind of go into power down mode. You don't want to address it, you just want to put your head in the sand and wait until it goes away. And I think there's just a very human response in that regard for a lot of these elected officials. And ironically, they're the same elected officials that will try to defend them putting their head in the sand by saying that you should be fit with a tinfoil hat. So it's kind of, it means you've got to go off in a, with a, you've got to approach this with a spirit of understanding that you're dealing with human beings with these elected officials. They got fancy titles, but they're, a lot of them, they don't have a background in electrical engineering to go off and tackle some of these issues. They don't have a background in medicine in many cases, and very few have a background that combines medicine with electrical engineering. So this is a difficult topic to get their head around, and I ask people to have a kind of be sympathetic to that understanding. Another thing is, especially when you're dealing at the state level, is that the state elected officials will simply say, hey, this is a federal issue. I'm going to play in my sandbox. They can play in their sandbox. The issue is that federal government should be taking care of this. And what they don't realize, or what they don't want to realize in many cases, is that the government agency responsible for regulating wireless emissions in our country is the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. It's not the EPA. It's not the FDA. It's not the CDC. It's the FCC, which has nobody that I'm aware of that has any health background serving on the FCC. And people need to realize the FCC is actually what they call a captive agency, which means that it's ran by the same people that they're attempting to regulate. In other words, telecommunication industry officials are the ones who are typically heading up the FCC. And in this case right now, we have Ajit Pai, who's running the FCC. He's the FCC chair. He's actually a former Verizon Wireless lawyer, excuse me. And he's somebody that I actually handed a paper that my wife and I had put together on wireless radiation concerns. I physically met with him, handed him this paper talking about both the benefits and the risks associated with wireless technology, and 5G in particular, and provided some suggested policy guidelines that he could pursue. And it was within a day or two of me handing him that, that he went out and did the equivalent of an executive order stating that that the states have no authority in blocking any of the deployment of this 5G technology in the state. So he had choice of which way to go on this, and I think he chose the wrong door. And the other kind of reason why a lot of officials, frankly, are tone deaf is getting into the seedier side of politics, and it deals with money. When it's a lot easier for legislators who are focused on their next reelection to give deference to the people that are writing them big checks. And constituents, even though they're the ones who vote for them or against them, as the case may be, they tend to take a back seat to the people that write big checks. I hate to say it that way, but that's the way it works. And it's very rare that you get somebody who's willing to go off and listen to the constituents and what their concerns are over the concerns of the lobbyists. There are officials that do act that way. I don't want to disparage all of them, but unfortunately, they're few and far between.
Can you tell us, like, maybe, did you have any experience ever with companies or lobbyists attempting to sway you against your will? Is there anything you can share us about, like, what is it like on the inside as a senator, you know, as an elected official, to be in the mix of being pulled like that?
Well, I developed a reputation pretty early on that said that I wasn't one of those guys that could be swayed that way. So they typically went around me as opposed to through me. I mean, to the point where eventually they helped influence the Senate Majority Leader in my second term to make sure I had no chairmanships of committees and that I was actually removed from all committees later in my term. So there's different ways. They saw me more as a barrier. And it's not because... We were talking earlier, I never threw dirt at my individual colleagues or anything, but I would attack bad policies with both barrels. They didn't want somebody being out smoking and sharing facts that were inconvenient to the citizens at large and making a case where it actually influenced legislature. I think on the 5G issue in particular, I think Michigan had one of the best votes against 5G deployment, I think, in the nation. Usually just passes with a landslide. We made it close in the state house because we were able to make our case to a lot of the state reps in the Michigan House. And they don't like that. So they will find, if they can't tackle you personally and they can't influence you individually, they will do their best to marginalize you and go around you. And that's what they did with me.
In the Michigan State hearings on 5G, you spoke, Dr. Sharon Goldberg spoke, Dr. Paul Heroux spoke, and who are also on the summit here, and many others, very eloquently, very effectively. You know, some of those videos really went viral. Yeah. What was the outcome of that? What's happened since there?
Well, they did pass a bill that essentially... prohibits local units of government from interfering with the deployment of 5G systems. So, but we did better than most other states in that regard. So we did get some awareness going. I was really appreciative of a lot of the names that you just mentioned there. Not only came out to testify in opposition to these bills, but they also came out to a forum that I hosted in Lansing where we specifically talked about the benefits and the risks associated with wireless technology. You can see it on my YouTube channel. There's a list up there for a wireless technology forum in the December of 2018. And all these experts that you talk about were brilliant in shaping a specific aspect of this overall policy debate. And I think while legislatively we lost, I think we did move the needle on this, and that's really what we're trying to do, is improve awareness around these issues. That's why what you're doing, Josh, is so important, because there's a lot of people that just want to throw this under the carpet and ignore it. They took that same approach with tobacco, with asbestos, with a lot of these environmental concerns, if you will, and they're trying to follow that same playbook with this wireless radiation, and it ain't gonna work. eventually they're going to get found out. And efforts like what you're doing with Dr. Sharon Goldberg and Ron Melnick and Dr. Deborah Davis and crew, and Frank Clegg out of Microsoft, former president of Microsoft Canada. I mean, these trailblazers are getting the word out about this issue, and it's developing a whole bunch of citizen-based advocacy groups now that are armed with the information that they're providing. And I've got, I'm excited to see what's germinating out of this. It's starting to get traction. I can just feel it right now. You know, we got folks with quite a bit of passion on this topic, like Daphna Takover, who just has a website called We Are the Evidence. When those messages get out to the general public, I think people are going to be pretty upset about the folks who've been trying to hide this and suppress this information for so long.
So as far as strategies to help hasten that turning point, to help be effective, and one of those, obviously, is reaching our elected officials to, you know, team up with them to get them aware of this issue and to be synergizing on this. What's an effective strategy in terms of spreading awareness both to citizens and to elected officials?
Well, in social media lingo, you find the influencers that are out there, and you get to those people and get that information out. My wife, who also testified in, against some of the 5G legislation that here in the state of Michigan, has been working behind the scenes to get to key media personalities and let them know about this awareness. And because she's an MD, this actually has some serious impacts, and she's making progress along those lines. Also because she's a pediatrician, and the most vulnerable population to a lot of these wireless radiation effects are actually kids. They're students in school. It also lends a lot of credence to that message. So education is first and foremost the key, but getting to these influencers in society, the people that can be a good sounding box for this issue, is very important. There's a concept called Overton window. I don't know if you've ever heard of that at all, but this concept of an Overton window is that the only topics or the only positions on a given policy issue that will be entertained by the society at large fit within this narrow little window called the Overton window. And what we're dealing with, the big challenge we have right now on this wireless radiation issue, is that pop culture or popular philosophy on this topic is outside of that window. And so we've either got to enlarge that window to include what we're talking about, or move the window over where the issues that we're talking about, which are, the evidence is pretty clear, becomes mainstream. And that's the challenge we have. Obviously, using elected officials to go off and communicate that is a powerful mechanism to influence the shifting of that window as well. And that's one of the reasons I was emboldened to go off and speak out on this particular issue. And it's been pretty effective at getting the word out in certain circles. As a matter of fact, the position paper my wife and I put together, we got contacted from people all over the world on this particular topic, because we're one of the few legislators that was willing to go off and talk about this. More legislators willing to go off and talk about this. And when we do that, then there's some specific policies that we can start advocating for. Number one is start safeguarding the most vulnerable populations among us. If you look at what's going on in Israel and France, they actually prohibit Wi-Fi in the schools. Now, that doesn't mean the kids can't get access to the internet. They can still get access to the internet. It just means you should be hardwiring those devices via Ethernet cables. And you can do that. This is not it's not challenging. I did that to my own home. I've hardwired businesses before and routed Ethernet cables. It's not only is it faster to go off and hardwire, it's actually more secure as well. So there's some other reasons to go off and pursue this. The other thing we can do, and which kind of gets at the heart of this whole policy debate, is to adjust these FCC guidelines in regards to acceptable wireless radiation profiles. And right now they're focused on thermal, the settings that they have are based on thermal effects of this wireless technology. What we need to do is expand that into non-thermal effects.
How do we get leverage? How do we get leverage though on the FCC, like to actually make that change? Because scientists have been screaming this at them, you know, for decades, right?
Yeah, well, it starts with inconvenient questions like what Senator Blumenthal asked the other day to industry when they were testifying before a Senate committee. He said, please, you keep saying that 5G is safe, so help me out. Show me the evidence that says that we're safe. And the fact of the matter is, right now, they are not incentivized to go off and worry about it being safe because they're indemnified against any lawsuits because these FCC guidelines are at such a level where you could drive a Mack truck through it from a wireless radiation profile or wireless emissions profile. It's orders of magnitude above what you'll see in most civilized nations across the world. And so they're not incentivized to go off and change things. That's why I zero in on changing those standards. And one way of influencing that is through that education process, highlight that there are adverse health impacts at well below, orders of magnitude below the threshold that are currently being specified, and also highlight the fact that it's not just about the power density levels, which is what's specified in the FCC. It's actually about the modulation around these signals that happens as well. And that's part of the education process, unfortunately. It is not easy, but here's why this is such a linchpin, though. If you change those standards, the laws that they're passing in the states and in communities all point to those FCC standards. And they say, as long as you deploy technology that's in accordance with these standards provided by the FCC, then we have no say in blocking any of your deployments. But if those standards get down to the point where more and more of these deployments are going to be bumping into the threshold specified in these FCC standards, now all of a sudden it's one heck of a little domino effect on making sure that the telecom companies are held accountable for the safety of their systems. So, and it's that's why I zero in on that. But it's a long haul. Ultimately, that FCC commissioner is appointed by the president. And so this is a case where it's important for us to go off, and people that helped get us the president into office are the ones that are most influential in helping him wake up to what is actually going on in this particular issue. And I you know, presidents are just like everybody else. I mean, you only take in the information that you get from your advisors. You can't be an expert on everything that's going on. And
So you're a supporter of President Trump, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So why, you know, and you're also an advocate for safe, you know, technology. Why is it, do you think, that he has gone on record on Twitter and his administration is so staunchly behind 5G, winning the 5G battle, like with China, against China and another, how it's being, like it's like a new Cold War, it seems. Why is it that him and his administration are so supportive of 5G, and how do you reconcile that? What do you think's going on there in terms of in terms of what's happening behind the scenes?
I think he's getting bad advice, and I think he's getting an incomplete picture of what's actually happening with the 5G deployment. I think he's been advised of the national security risks associated with the 5G deployment, in particular due to the issues around Huawei and ZTE being involved in the deployment of these networks here in the U.S. because of the aforementioned issue with the motherboards and backdoor access to our networks. He sees that as a security issue when our whole power grid, for example, would be dependent upon equipment that's connected to these devices. That's a big issue. There's also an economic competitive advantage because with this 5G deployment, they're talking about new efficiencies that can be leveraged into getting more bang for the buck for our economy. So it uses our resources more effectively. That's where he's been focused on, and I think you can tell that the president's pretty competitive by nature. So he wants to be first in anything, and it's been positioned as a race between us and Russia and China. And due to his competitive nature, he wants to win that. So all I ask is that gets a few more advisors in there that identify the other risks around personal privacy and adverse health impacts, and also take a step back and ask the question, okay, we're in a race. What's that finish line really look like? Where are we headed? And this 5G stuff works great for totalitarian governments like China and for Russia. But for a country with the Fourth Amendment, for example, that's founded on an appreciation for freedom, maybe this finish line isn't exactly where we want to head. And so I think if we actually started acknowledging some of the risks associated with this wireless technology, I think there's an opportunity for the president to get off the 5G bandwagon and instead get on a bandwagon that says, guys, we can get connected as a society. We can get all these economic efficiencies, but we can lead the world in being the folks who deploy it in a safe manner that actually protect our privacy rights, that actually protect us from these adverse health impacts. I'm an engineer, and you give us the right specifications and the right requirements and the right objectives and the right boundaries, we can come up with some pretty innovative solutions to different problems that we face as society. But in this case, the first step is understanding what those real risks are, and I don't think the president's been given the full picture.
So in March of 2019, there was a conference that was particularly, you know, interesting on 5G called the CPAC conference on 5G. Can you tell us about that, and what are the key takeaways from that?
Well, the whole conference was a conservative political action conference, so there's a lot of topics besides 5G at that conference. But one of the panel discussions I found very interesting because it was specifically talking about the topic of 5G. And they had some experts on there that knew about the 5G rollout. And I found it interesting that they acknowledged that there are serious risks around the deployment of 5G. So here are people within the inner circle of the administration and halls of Congress that actually have quite a bit of connections with the folks who are making decisions around policies. They acknowledge that there is a technology or a national security risk associated with 5G. Unfortunately, they took the approach that said, well, that's why we need to control the deployment. And they said, you know, it's they took it upon themselves saying, I know we're playing with fire on this, but we need to be the ones controlling the matchsticks. Rather than taking a step back and saying, hey, do we really need this fire in the first place? I mean, what are we actually doing here? Is there another way of going off and heating things up for a warm meal besides going off and taking this approach on a massive wireless system that is, by the way, operating in the same frequency spectrum as the active denial system, which was used for crowd control by the military. So Anyway, the good news is they recognize it as there are risks associated with it. The bad news is they said, well, that's why we need to control it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any perspective on the QAnon meme or that whole stream, which is basically giving its followers the message to trust the plan and not really the message to be involved as a change agent, per se?
Well, as somebody who's got my own Q tie clip, I appreciate what has been happening in that area. There are a lot of moving pieces with what's going on inside of D.C. I think this concept of a deep state that is separated from the best interests of the people we're supposed to be serving is very real. And I do realize that there might be some compromises along the way as we go off and try to address that. But I think in this particular issue around wireless radiation and some of the concerns around that, it ties into how did they tap the president? How did they go off and tap his conversations? Well, they used technology similar to what we're talking about right here with 5G. The NSA database that has information on everybody, all their phone calls, everything else transcribed and available for people to go off and query. This is Big Brother phase one. And so from that perspective, I think it is, I believe overall they're attempting to dismantle it, because the people that were using this, frankly, were the ones trying to keep our current president out of office with that technology. That was pretty clear. The thing that makes me a little nervous is that when I hear things like at that CPAC conference where they say, well, the key is we need to be the ones in control of this technology. And so it gets into this spy versus spy discussion. As long as I'm the one in control of the detonator, I'm okay. The fact that they may have to be in control of it before they can go off and dismantle it, that may be true. Frankly, that might be a viable approach associated with it and something we need to be talking about. But I would rather dismantle it first, and we'll see what happens on this. This is not a this is not a straightforward discussion at all on it. And I'm always in the President Reagan mode where it's trust but verify. I'm very curious about it. I don't know if it's just political opera at this point in time, or whether or not it is has a lot of substance to it. But I'm certainly seeing events play out the way that they were predicted to be played out.
Just to ask a side question here, do you encourage people to run for political office to attempt to change the system from within or not?
Yes, I think it's very important. As a matter of fact, I've created an organization in Michigan called the Michigan Grassroots Alliance to help provide them with the resources they need to be successful. As I think I mentioned, I ran for governor back in 2017, 2018 timeframe, and our message resonated with a lot of people. I'm an engineer. People are looking for solutions. I provide a lot of solutions. The issue is we didn't have the money to reach a broad enough audience. At election day, I had 15% name recognition across the state. That's not enough to win. Now, we got 13% of the vote, which means that 87% of the people who heard what I had to say were supporting me. But you got to reach that other 85%. That's why I'm putting together a grassroots advocacy group called Michigan Grassroots Alliance to help provide them with the cover that they need to reach that other 85% that only seems to tune in on election day.
Okay. Do you see it as a viable approach that we the people could take to inform but go beyond inform and actually litigate, actually, you know, do criminal legal action in addition to liability, commercial liability-based actions? Just these different approaches upon the FCC, upon even President Trump and his administration to come from a stronger position to indicate our commitment to that, look, we're taking this seriously. We're not just going to keep asking and asking and asking. How do you see an effective strategy for, you know, the people to ramp up the matter here to get an actual result?
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, that's what you're framing is sometimes referred to as lawfare. And it's one strategy to go off and approach it. In this case, we're hampered by the provisions of the 1996 Telecom Act that was passed by the federal government. And in that, they essentially indemnify the telecommunications industry from any lawsuits, particularly around the adverse health impacts. You saw, I referenced earlier, I think, the court case between some citizen advocacy group in the city of Naperville versus the city of Naperville was ruled on by the Seventh Circuit Court. And when they issued their ruling, they recognized that there was a Fourth Amendment interest associated with it, but they ruled the wrong way in regards to whether or not they should protect the individual rights versus the what they saw as the public good. And so we've got that as a hurdle to go through. There's a court decision that's already out there. So the deck is kind of stacked against us, I think, from a lawfare strategy perspective at this point. I think we just need to really ramp up the education, the advocacy, and essentially tackle this with knowledge in much the same way that we finally couldn't deny what the impacts were when it comes to the harms of tobacco. I mean, when you start seeing the incidence of lung cancer going up, well, that was a big deal. Now, with cell phones, you can sit there and see, for example, that we just had Senator McCain. He passed away with cancer. Well, if you see where he held his phone on a regular basis and where he had his cancer, guess what? They're in the same spot. If you go off and look at MRIs of women with breast cancer who put cell phones in their bra, you will notice that the pattern on that MRI maps one-to-one with all the antennas that are found in that cell phone. If we got that information out, I think what we'd start seeing is more of a clamor from citizens at large to hold their elected officials accountable for protecting against these adverse health impacts. And also, frankly, there's a bigger picture with the constitutional issue. I think we're today, unfortunately, I think we're relatively constitutionally illiterate as a society. And that's a topic for another day here that I've been pushing on around our social studies standards in Michigan. But ultimately, our Constitution is out there to protect us on it. We just need to assert the rights. And the only way we can assert those rights is if we know they actually exist.
Yeah, well said. Can you talk about, let's get into maybe some deeper social aspects. And we talked before the call again our interview again about the pursuit of convenience and how 5G is being sold as convenience. You know, what are some maybe deeper issues that we can look at in ourselves and in society at large, and how, you know, values seem to be being expressed or being steered? And how, what do you think are some of those solutions on that deeper level?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think as a society, we've lost a little bit of our moral compass, which means we've lost an appreciation for the pursuit of the truth. So when an issue like this comes up, and it's such a complex issue, that people kind of give up on even seeking the truth, and which is a shame. I think there's we're more willing to listen to what somebody else tells us than to go off and investigate it on our own to see whether or not it's true or not. And I think this plays into a lot of different aspects of society. It plays into faith in general, I believe. And, you know, we're kind of talking about faith in government, but I think it applies to faith in general. And if you're like me, I believe that a lot of our freedoms that were put in place in the United States in particular are based on very biblical principles. I mean, I can track back to specific passages in the Bible, for example, that highlight how our system of government got created, what the foundation was and the structure of it. And if you look back in the history of the Pilgrims, you understand that appreciation. And there was, when we start talking about the common good and the public good, it was taken in a different context, frankly. It was looking at how to protect these individual liberties and our individual access to some of these larger issues, if you will. Instead, we've kind of replaced that with this groupthink, if you will, that is harmful. So if you're on the wrong side of the groupthink, we get into some serious issues. That's why simple things like, are we a republic or a democracy, are important to me, because in a democracy, it's a tyranny of the majority. In a republic, based on a system of laws where we actually benefit from the wisdom of our ancestors and we dig into the truth of matter, there's safety for the minorities. Your minority views, like us, frankly, on the wireless radiation topic, those are protected and they're listened to. And I think we've lost an appreciation for that perspective and that pursuit of individual rights and pursuit of the truth.
Yeah. I'd like to go further into that, because part of this summit is we're looking at understanding, you know, ourselves more, our motivations, our reasons, our why, getting more deeper to what's important, our priorities, you know, looking at what 5G is about and kind of how it's being sold to us, and gratification and instant downloads, and just connecting in a way that's artificial versus, you know, the real essence of life and values. Like, and I'm interested in what you say about faith and your reasons, your why. Tell us a little bit more about that. Like, how can we tap into our deeper why, or what is your why, your reason for taking on these battles that you've taken on, you know, through your political career and now on into your new venture and with this 5G. Like, what's your why, and how can we tap into that at a deeper level?
Well, first, I think I want to approach that from a perspective of some wise words from Benjamin Franklin. And he said a long time ago that those willing to give up their liberty for a little bit of security deserve neither. And that's the choice we have before us. I mean, when we talk about how 5G is being pitched to us, it's being pitched to us from a matter of convenience. It's a security, comfort. That's what's being pitched to us. And you know, a lot of people, I tell you, I serve those who serve us in the military right now. That's my passion. And a lot of people died to protect those freedoms. They weren't very comfortable when that was happening. Their families were not comfortable to hear the news of their loved ones dying to protect those freedoms. A lot of people sacrificed to give us the society we live in today. And I think a lot of people are taking that for granted. From a faith perspective, I take that a step further. I highlight that it's for freedom that Christ set us free. That's on Galatians chapter 5. And for me, I'm passionate about making sure that we have the option to pursue that freedom. I mean, we could have lived in a world where God told us everything we need to go off and do on a regular basis. We had no free will, no discussion about a given topic. We'd be just little mind-numb robots going through life. And but that's not the way God created us, I believe. And he's got this passion for us to make these choices in life. And on this particular issue, it seems like a lot of people are seeking to just bury their heads in the sand and not even question what they're being told on either side of the issue, frankly. And I think it's important that instead we take a step back and actually start questioning some of these topics. And for me, what motivates me to get involved on this, frankly, was I was one of those folks that was not engaged in politics at all for the first 44 years of my life. I mean, we never talked about politics in the household. We never talked about any issues of consequence. I was focused on playing sports and having fun and what time's the game on type of discussion. But I got woken up after I started waking up in my faith to understand that there's more to life than just satisfying my own needs and my own interests. And when I started doing that, I started looking out for the best interests of others. Life started getting a little bit more complex, right? And we started addressing issues like this. Matter of fact, that's what got me motivated to run for politics. I did not want to run for public office. I'm an engineer. Engineers are not known for being extroverts on any topic. I felt so called to go run for office that I felt a little bit like Jonah going to Nineveh. And frankly, I didn't want to get swallowed by a big fish, so I decided to go out to Nineveh, for those of you in Michigan, that Nineveh is Lansing. and it changes the perspective, and it gives you the ability, when you know why you're doing it, and when you know who you're serving, and you're not serving the lobbyists up there, you're serving the people of Michigan, and you take an oath to support the Michigan Constitution, the U.S. Constitution. And the whole concept of an oath, I think, has kind of been diluted, or the appreciation for that oath has been diluted over the years. But it's, for me, I took it very seriously. I want my yes to be yes and my no to be no. And when I serve, I want to make sure that it's serving in a way that when this political career is long over, I can sit there and say, I ran the race, and I did so with integrity. And I'm thankful saying I think I did that in the 8 years that I was in service there, but it is a very tempting environment. John Adams once said that the difference between a politician and a statesman is that a politician fears man and a statesman fears God. A lot of folks are in the fears man category. They're afraid of what people are going to say about them. They're afraid of people on topics like this are saying, hey, I'm going to fit you for a tinfoil hat, or they're afraid of maybe I'm not going to get enough people to support me or vote for me in the next election, or I'm afraid I'm going to lose certain committee chairmanships, or I'm not going to get my bill passed. They're fearing man. Ultimately, though, what let me sleep well at night was that I believe I was in the fear God category, and I think that makes all the difference.
Yeah, well. So a lot of people watching this might have a religious perspective or background, and a lot of people might, you know, have a perspective that institution or the church or religion in general has caused so much harm on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, we talked before the call, like, for me, I resonate with kind of the original teachings and not so much the church. Yeah. What would you say to people kind of struggling with this idea? It seems like we're going through this freaking existential crisis on the planet right now, Patrick. Like, we're really, whether it's 5G or, you know, these other agendas, I believe 5G is maybe the most pressing right now in terms of a corporate agenda that's, you know, and the amount of harm that is said to be caused. But you know, what would you say to people about that, on that topic? How do we process this sort of this inner fear of, like, even, you know, is there going to be, like, a quote unquote apocalypse? Is really going to hit the fan? Will we be around 5 years from now? Will we become like this sort of AI Borg? You know, this transhumanist sort of organism? How do we process that in terms of the deeper essence of who we are not from a religious perspective, but maybe from like your soul's perspective, or each of our soul's perspective. How can, you know, do you have any wisdom as we kind of wrap up here for how we can best navigate this?
I think ultimately it comes down to the pursuit of truth. And we're just dealing with a technical issue when it comes to this 5G deployment, right? But as you point out, there's some connections into this broader metaphysical question about what is truth, what is the truth of our existence. And when you start talking about technology like 5G, it really presses the limits of that a little bit, right? Because now we're getting to the point where it theoretically, when this is pursued all the way down to its logical extension, now we're getting to the point where there's an artificial intelligence that could potentially be managing our steps as we go forward, and to a certain extent be a bot. That's kind of already happening on social media, and as to what information gets portrayed and what information doesn't get portrayed.
I know. Well, I'm being blacklisted on YouTube. My stuff doesn't even come.
Yeah.
Please go ahead.
I'm seeing in Twitter, I'm regularly losing people off my Twitter following every single day, whether I post or I don't post. It's like an algorithm that says that you lose 2 to 3 a day. So we know this stuff is happening. So the bottom line comes down to what kind of people are we as individuals. And everybody has a different approach to take this on. I often say there's four gospels for a reason. They're hitting four different audiences and ways of thinking. You got John with a little bit more metaphorical with a lot of his explanations. And then you get Mark, which is kind of the Ernest Hemingway of the gospels, and says, see Jesus run type of approach on it. Everybody approaches their search for faith a little bit differently. I've gotten the opportunity to meet and talk with a former atheist by the name of Lee Strobel. And Lee approached this as a journalist. And he actually went off and, because his wife gave her life to Christ, he went out to go off and disprove Christianity. And in the process, actually found out that Christ is real. And he believed the truths that were found in the gospel. For other people, they look at the they take a step back and look at the beauty of God's creation and actually recognize the fact that there's got to be a creator in there somewhere, and they know that whenever you see a painting that somebody painted it, right? Well, if you're sitting up in Yosemite Park and you're looking over the beauty of that park and you're sitting there going, you know, and you say, oh, nobody created this. This is just a bunch of random events that kind of pulled themselves together. It forces you to recognize that maybe it's not so random after all. And and there's some people that just do it by experience. And unfortunately, a lot of people will experience the negative aspect of people that profess something in their faith but see something exactly the opposite in practice. And that's probably one of the biggest detractors that we have in society, is somebody who says that they're one thing but does something completely different. And Jesus talks about this in Pharisees. He says, do everything that they say, just don't do what they do. And we've got a lot of folks that do that here in society today. And you know, you can use faith and use the Bible and God's word as one measure of your ability to go off and stick to what you know, you testify to as a truth. But another one, frankly, more a little bit back in the world, if you will, is Constitution. Why is it that other legislators are not going off and highlighting the issue with issues like 5G? Haven't they read Article 4, Section 51 of the Michigan Constitution like I have, which says that health of our citizens is supposed to be a primary concern? Why aren't they taking that to heart? It's the same issue with us and a lot of people's walk for faith. It's like we say something, we read something, but we don't take it to heart. Unfortunately, our hearts can be kind of vulnerable to being led astray at times. And the encouraging part is, I believe that if you just stick to your pursuit of the truth, you will find yourself on ground that is rocky and solid, that cannot be shaken. And if you just listen to what the world has to say and the chatter in there, you're going to find yourself on building a house on shifting sand and being blown wherever the wind blows. So I just encourage people to take advantage of documentaries like what you're doing right here and getting the truth out. Let people not take what we're saying at face value, but go off and do their own research. I heard all the stuff around wireless radiation concerns before I went off and delved into the studies on my own. I heard all that stuff, but I was a victim of the eyes that can see but eyes that see but can't see, eyes that hear or ears that hear but can't hear. I was in that mode. What we've got to do is go off and show mercy, first of all, because there's a lot of people in that mode, but be persistent on conveying these truths and getting them out to as many people as possible, all your friends and family. Let them take you down, let them investigate on their own, and I think in the final analysis, the truth will be pretty clear.
Thank you, Patrick. So your position paper on 5G and your videos, they're all linked from your website, right?
Yeah, if you go to morninginmichigan.com, you'll, in particular, if you go to a YouTube channel, that's where I'm starting to collect a lot of the more poignant, I'm creating playlists around different topics, and one of the topics is wireless technology risk. And you can get access to that, which includes a lot of the floor speeches I've had on this issue and how we try.
G and your videos, they're all linked from your website, right?
Yeah, if you go to morninginmichigan.com, you'll, in particular, if you go to a YouTube channel, that's where I'm starting to collect a lot of the more poignant, I'm creating playlists around different topics, and one of the topics is wireless technology risk. And you can get access to that, which includes a lot of the floor speeches I've had on this issue and how we try to bring it to people's attention.
Okay, good. Well, thank you for that and for spending time with us today. I really appreciate your time and energy and dedication and for sharing us your insights and wisdom. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, thank you, Josh. And thanks for pulling this project together. This is central to everything we've been talking about. It's about giving people information so that they can make a good, informed, rational decision.